been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Truba behind his own goal. He'll be content to stand there and kill off the clock. 10 seconds left. You can get on your feet back home and bring it home. Before the All-Star break, the Winnipeg Jets will fashion together a come-from-behind victory in Chicago tonight. They've won 7 straight in their own division against Central Division teams, and they do so with a 5-3 victory tonight at the United Center in Chicago, Illinois.
Paulie Edmonds with the call on Thursday night. The Jets come from behind victory over the Chicago Blackhawks. Make it 4 in a row against the Blackhawks this season. The Jets victorious on Thursday night, entering into the All-Star break with the good feelings. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. A reminder, hour number 3, we're going to open up the phone lines. The show that doesn't take calls is taking them starting at 11 a.m. So you can get ready for that. In the meantime, you can reach us in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website, our website, with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Drew, as far as I'm concerned, you would make the top 100 hosts of all time.
Thank you, Ezzy. Appreciate that kind words. You would make the top 1,000 analyst list of all time. Just nodding.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay. That man is Ezra Ginsberg. The man on my far left is Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Gentlemen, we start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning.
Like I thought we were going to start with the top 100 players
we'll get
of all
to the,
time.
We'll get to the top 100 later on. We let the rage boil a little bit longer. People have been raging all night about it.
I love how Dale Hawerchuk was on that list.
Yeah. Well, I said we're going to get to it. Let the fury build. I want you to be right. I wanted you to be a boiling pot of water about to burst in fury when we talk about that in hour number 2. I think that's a reasonable way to go about it.
I'm only boiling water when I'm making Kraft dinner. Or maybe spaghetti.
They're basically the same thing.
Yeah. Well, no. What?
Well, Kraft, I mean, they're both just pasta.
Yeah, it's a different type of pasta. Let's go, Drew.
Do you make anything other than pasta usually?
Like, ever?
Yeah.
What do you mean? I eat tons. I had Asian last night.
Yeah, you didn't make it, though.
Well, I can make Asian noodles.
Which is just pasta.
Yes, but it's not the same. What are we arguing about here?
That all you know how to do is boil water.
No, I can cook, yes.
Okay.
I can make salads. I can make other things. Thanks.
Alrighty, let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets. They enter the All-Star break, as I mentioned, on a high note, defeating the Chicago Blackhawks on Thursday night. They sit here currently, gentlemen, 23-25-4. 52 games having been played this season for the team. They have 30 games remaining. They're not in a playoff spot. That has been the case pretty much all season long, is that they're not in a playoff spot. But here we are on the 28th of January, 30 games to go. They sit 3 points behind the Calgary Flames for the final wild card spot. Both teams have played the same number of games. They have the Dallas Stars, Vancouver Canucks, and Los Angeles Kings all in front of them. What record do the Jets need to go, in your estimation, over these final 30 games to really have a shot at that at a Western Conference playoff spot?
I don't know, Drew. 18 wins, 19 wins, 20 wins. I mean, they're going to have to win 60% to 65% of their games. It looks like it's going to take 88, 89, 90 points to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. I think we'd all agree with that, unless, you know, the winning percentages drastically increase for some of the teams that are competing for those last wild card spots. So, I mean, the Jets can't win 50% of their games or 55% of their games. I believe their winning percentage right now is about 45%. So, I mean, you're looking at somewhere between 18 and 20 wins. You're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 points, right? To get to 90 or around that mark. So, I mean, we know that the Jets have won four or five games three times this year. They haven't won three games in a row yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're looking at the next five-game chunk, and you got to at least win three of those games. But, you know, you hope that you can pull off, you know, a four out of five stretch like you have before. So, I mean, started off with the game on Thursday. And by the way, I mean, that was very impressive the way the Jets came back, because the Blackhawks were completely outplaying the Jets for those first two periods. If you look at the possession numbers or if you look at the shot totals, I mean, Connor Hellebuyck was excellent. So you got to give Connor Hellebuyck, Drew, a lot of credit for the way he played. I mean, he wasn't playing for those four games when Andrei Pavlik was in net. So I thought it was really impressive. I mean, give Andrew Kopp a lot of credit. You know, he ties the game up. And then Brian Little had another incredible game, and he gets the winning goal. So, I mean, we know that the Jets are if they're not going to go on a four or five game winning streak, they're going to have to win at a 60% or so clip to make the playoffs. And is that impossible? Absolutely not. But you definitely can't afford very many two or three game losing streaks when you consider that there's only 30 games left.
You know, the fact that we're still talking about the Winnipeg Jets and the playoffs is amazing, and it just is somewhat of a testament to the fact that the Western Conference, especially those teams that fighting for the wild card spot, aren't very good right now, and or isn't very good. And the good news for Winnipeg is, like I said, you're only about 3 points out from that last wild card spot from which is currently held by Calgary. And if you look at what the Jets have coming up, six of the next seven games are against the Central Division. And so they've been very good. I think they're 11-4-1 right now against the Central. And very good at home. I think they're 5-0 or 6-0 at home. So they've been very good within the division, which obviously is important, especially now in this stretch when you're playing them six of the next seven games. And I agree with Ez. It's not a function of you win one, lose one, win one, lose one. This is the time you absolutely have to put a streak together. And if you want to be able to climb over these teams, look, you've got Dallas twice in the next couple of weeks. You've got Colorado. You've got Chicago again. I mean, if they can go 5-0 against Chicago, that's somewhat of a significant number.
Yeah.
And so you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, and you've got Tampa Bay. So you've got Central Division teams, which you've played fairly well against.
Yeah.
And then you've got a Tampa Bay team, which is somewhat, you know, reeling. So there's an opportunity there. And I know people are saying, well, you know, the likelihood is that the Jets aren't making the playoffs. And, yeah, you know, right now they're on the outside looking in. But, again, because of the way the West is currently composed, they're not out of it by any stretch of the imagination, simply because none of these teams are rising up. St. Louis continues to fall back. I mean, realistically, Calgary, Vancouver, none of these teams are really rising to the occasion. L.A., they're still waiting. So if you look at this and you're thinking to yourself, like Nashville is kind of doing what we expected Nashville to do, which is kind of getting their act together and assuming that spot in the top three of the Central.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, St. Louis is like is still in free fall.
Well, they lost 5-1 to the Minnesota Wild back on Thursday night.
Right, and they had to pull Hutton, and they put Allen in. So, I mean, again, it's by no stretch of the imagination a secure situation in St. Louis, which is shocking. I mean, I don't think any of us at the beginning of this year would have thought that St. Louis is going to be one of those teams that would be a potential to fall out of the playoffs potentially.
And what St. Louis, Dave, has going for them is that they have three games in hand on the Jets.
Right, of course.
So, I mean, they have to do something with those three games in hand. Just because you have three games in hand doesn't mean you're necessarily going to get 6 points, right?
Sure.
But that's what they have going for them. And I think Dave makes a good point. The Jets have been very good against the Central Division this year, especially against Chicago. The Jets would be 52-0, I tweeted, if they played Chicago 52 times. So
hang on. Carry the one. Yeah, your math is correct so far this season.
So, Drew, the next five games after the All-Star break are against Central Division teams. Six of the next seven are against Central Division teams. So you could look at the schedule and consider that they've got days off between. They have 2 days off three times in that stretch. So you've got one back-to-back. You got Chicago and Tampa Bay, February 10th and 11th, Friday, Saturday night. But aside from that, I mean, you've got not a very tough schedule. You've been very good against the Central. You know, you're going to play a very desperate Dallas team next Thursday, and you're going to play a very good Minnesota Wild team the week after. But, I mean, it's not the hardest schedule.
And the fact is, as you just said, the back-to-back is at home, so there's no travel involved. So mm-hmm. that's definitely in the Jets' favor in the sense that they don't have anywhere to go.
Just like we saw this past Monday, Tuesday against the Anaheim and San Jose, the rare back-to-back at home where you don't travel.
That's right. So you don't have to worry about the travel. And, again, like I said, you know, it was funny because Ezzy's friend Dan Falloon had a funny tweet about when the Jets beat the Hawks. He said, I think when Cheval Dayoff was instructed to build a roster to beat the Blackhawks, they didn't mean only the Blackhawks.
Yeah, Paul Wiesek wrote about that, included that tweet in his column in today's Free Press as well.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny because, I mean, it's amazing, and we're somewhat incredulous that this Jets team, who seems to kind of, have problems with bottom feeding teams, manages to beat a team like the Blackhawks four times this season.
Yeah, and I look at this next seven-game stretch, and I think it's good to look at those seven games because six of those seven are against the Central Division, and then you've actually got Dallas after Tampa Bay. So if you look at those seven games, Drew, I'd say that the Jets, in order to really make up some ground in the playoff race, they probably have to win five of those seven.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's fair to say that you probably have to win. They have to win five of seven in the next, for the rest of the season. They have put themselves behind the eight ball, as we've documented all season long on the show. But yet somehow, because as Dave mentioned, the Central Division and the Western Conference are so poor this year, it hasn't been a death blow as of yet.
Right.
But you got 30 games to go. By my count, when I did this yesterday quickly, I believe 20 of those 30 games are against current playoff teams. So it's not going to be easy. It's not like it's a simple schedule by any stretch, but we have talked about their success against the Central Division, and really you're going to know over the next seven games, over the next where six of those seven are against Central Division opponents. If they flame out over the next seven games against division opponents, well, the rest of the season doesn't matter. But if they hold court and they do well against the Central Division opponents, well, then maybe you're talking about a more interesting March.
Right, and because the only thing consistent about the Jets' season has been inconsistency, I mean, Dave has been putting up articles about, evaluating the games in 10-game stretches, and with the exception of games 11 to 20, every single 10-game stretch in the first 50 games, the Jets have been either 500 or one game under 500.
Sure.
So, I mean, 500 is not going to get you into the playoffs. And we talked about, the Western Conference is not as strong as it was 2 years ago when the Jets made the playoffs. And I believe they had 99 or 100 points.
99, yeah.
So, I mean, this year, 89, 90 points is going to get you in. In the Eastern Conference, it's going to be much tougher for some of those teams in the Metropolitan Division to make it. You're probably going to have five teams in the Metro making it. So, I mean, this is a huge stretch. I mean, they lost those disappointing games to San Jose and Anaheim, so they pick up a huge win. I mean, we can't really overstate how big of a win that was in Chicago, because it looked like they weren't going to get any points with, 5 minutes left in that game, and they managed to, muster up a win there. So that's huge. Hopefully that they can carry that over after the All-Star break, but, I mean, it's definitely going to be tough.
It was also the nature – you're right, Ez. It was also the nature of the win. I mean, the fact is they had that 2-0 lead. They gave it up. Then it was 3-2 lead for Chicago, and then they managed to come back and beat a very good Chicago team. So a team that, like you said, had dominated for most of the game, had the puck. Connor Hellebuyck, I think, faced, 40-something shots? 41, 42 shots or something like that?
Something like
that.
I think he had a 925 save percentage.
Yeah, he did.
So.
I think he was like – I think he stopped like 37 of 40 shots or 38 of 41 shots, whatever it was. He was very good, and they needed him to be good, and – you know what? I have to say, listening to him post-game, and I've listened to him a lot. I've talked to him a lot, both here in the NHL and in the AHL. He sounded very relaxed, and he sounded very composed, and that's good. That's a good thing. And it sounds like this two-week respite that he had from playing in the NHL wasn't a bad thing for him, because he really did sound like a player who, has – understood that, the NHL isn't something that's just handed to you.
He benefited from the time off?
I think so. Let me be clear. I don't believe by any stretch of the imagination it's the last hiccup that Connor Hellebuyck is going to have in net. But the fact is, when you're putting a 23-year-old goaltender as your number one goalie with as few NHL games as he has, that there are going to be hiccups still. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's the last opportunity for Connor Hellebuyck to have a bad game and he's just going to only play well from here on out. I still think that there's going to be some, goals that go in that he'll like to have back.
Yeah. But he still gave up three goals. I mean, played well, but he gave up three goals.
Yeah, which, but, I mean, that's also a function of the Jets' defense.
Right.
It's not, again, sometimes we love in this society to attribute blame to people, but the fact is that it's a team game, and when you see some of these breakdowns, you think to yourself, well, I mean, yeah, the goalie could have made that stop, but also the defenseman could have prevented the forward from getting in that deep. There's a lot of things that go into it, right?
Well, don't we like to attribute blame on this show too?
Yeah, generally. But we usually look just right to that
blame
chair.
Just blame it on me usually is how it works. But you mentioned that, Dave, and that's one of the questions I wanted the audience to address in hour number three when we open up the phones is, of goaltending or collective team defense, if you could only fix one problem, which one would fans want to see fixed first? Is it just goaltending or is it the sort of the entire defensive mentality of the Winnipeg Jets? So that's going to be one of the questions, one of the topics of conversation during hour number three when we open up the phone lines. So you can get ready for that. That's 11 a.m. We're going to open up the phone lines. In the meantime, let's go to break. When we come back, Brian Little, we're going to talk about him, how underrated he is and how impressive he's been playing. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Pulled off the wall, played softly toward the middle, right on the stick there of Trouba, who jumps up, now dropped it for Little, moves in, what a shot, no, he scores! Brian Little with a wrist shot, two quickies by Winnipeg, they've regained the lead, it's 4-3 for the Jets. How do you like that?
How do you like that? How do you like the play of Brian Little this season?
I like it a lot.
For the Winnipeg Jets, 29 games played, 26 points. This segment will talk about Brian Little and how indispensable he's been for this Jets team. Should mention the segment is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
And always wear a mouth guard.
Hang on. You guys are going to go play hockey? You're going to go play shinny afterwards? Mouth guard?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, just making sure. Like, you know, practice what you preach there, as that's the important part.
I wear a mouth guard when I sleep as well.
That's because you have sleep apnea.
Nope, because it helps me to not eat while I sleep.
Ah, also important. Always very important there. It's good thinking. That's just good strategy.
I used to go to bed eating popcorn every night.
Popcorn, just straight in there. Just
I woke up and I was just surrounded by kernels.
Yeah, that's not a choking hazard whatsoever. But no, that's good thinking on your part there, Ez. Anyways, as we mentioned, Brian Little, been absolutely tremendous for the Winnipeg Jets this season since he returned from injury, and he's been especially tremendous over the past 5 games. How does 9 points in 5 games sound to you for Brian Little? You know, Mark Scheifele has started off the season so hot, and he's slowed down a bit, which isn't overwhelmingly surprising.
Yeah, and he had the injury there.
I'm not sure he's 100% healthy, but I don't know who is 100%
healthy. You're not a doctor, but you'll take a look.
That's right. But Brian Little, going back the last 5 games, really the entirety of the time since he's returned from injury, has probably, with Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, been the Jets' best forward. And nobody talks about Brian Little. They don't talk about him in Winnipeg very often, and they don't talk about him outside of Winnipeg ever. It's just incredible how good Brian Little's been for this Jets team.
Yes, and I know Dave is a big Brian Little fan, as am I and as are you, Drew. And, I mean, just think about that for a second, guys. 6 goals and 9 points in 5 games.
Yeah.
I mean, he's having an incredible stretch here, and Brian Little has been very good since returning from injury. He missed over 20 games, and he has had an immediate impact on this team. And, I mean, Brian Little is not an unfamiliar name for Jets and Thrashers fans. I mean, Brian Little was the number one center until Mark Scheifele came along. But the way Brian Little is playing right now, I think it deserves to be talked about more. I mean, we saw him get the game-winning goal on Thursday night against Chicago. He's got a couple of game winners this year. I mean, 26 points in 29 games. It's almost at a point-per-game clip.
Mm-hmm.
He has just been incredible, and we know how good he is, you know, in the face-off circle, and we know how good he can be on the power play. It's been a breath of fresh air for this Jets team, who has suffered through 200-plus man games lost to injury. I mean, I think he has just really galvanized the group. He has stabilized everything, Dave. I mean, he's a veteran presence. You know, he's been in the NHL for 10 years now. I think the NHL needs to recognize Brian Little more for how good of a center he really is.
Brian Little's like the Rodney Dangerfield of hockey. He doesn't get no respect. And it's crazy to me. Like, it really is. It's I'm somewhat incredulous when I watch him play and you watch the things he does and the things he does well, which is quite often, you know, all areas that you want your centers to do, face-offs, controlling the play. I mean, if you look at his advanced stats, he's second only to Blake Wheeler in Corsi and Fenwick. And he just does all these things. And now... you know, we kind of forget that he went through a major injury, like as he just touched on, and missed so many games. And you don't just come back and then are in game shape. I mean, it takes a while to get up to speed. I mean, most of these guys that you've been playing with now have 30-something games in the NHL to that point in the season, mm-hmm. and you're trying to reestablish yourself from the first period of game one. So you have a lot of work to do because there's only so much you can get from practice. I mean, obviously practice is important, but you need to be in games. And we see with Brian Little's numbers of late, he's just been unbelievable. And again, like I think – I don't remember what press conference it was, and Coach Maurice was asked about the Jets' power play and why is it suddenly, you know, tagging along at a much better rate. And he said, it's Brian Little. He goes, ever since Brian Little returned, you know, we have a much more stable power play. And it's just the things he does so well. Again, face-offs. His shooting is lights out. What about his pass? I mean, his pass to Patrick Laine was next world. Like, that was just unbelievable. And again, we take for granted because his name is right now behind Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele. But again, Brian Little. And Brian Little, as someone who's in the room a lot, I can tell you he's not a flashy guy. And you know, he's a good interview, though. He does have a lot to say when you talk to him. But he's not a flashy guy. He's not one of those guys who stands out. And he's just there. He's a worker bee. And he gets his job done.
Well, it's funny, Dave. You know, I agree with everything you're saying here. And it's funny because he's not an alternate captain. But he really is one of the major leaders of this team, right? And he's been here for all 6 years, just as Blake Wheeler and Dustin Byfuglien have been. And you know, you look at what he's doing. Is he going to keep up this pace? He's at a 0.9 point per game clip. Probably not. But I mean, he's traditionally, you know, a guy that still is around 0.7, 0.8. His best season was 3 years ago when he had 64 points. But when you look at the way he's playing, I would argue that this is the best we've ever seen Brian Little play offensively. But I think you forget how consistent he's been. I mean, he's a traditional 55, 60-point guy year after year. Has he missed some time? Yeah, he missed some time last year, and he missed some time the year before. It was 3 years ago where he had the full season, and I believe the lockout year he was also healthy for all of that. But Brian Little is such an important member of this team. I mean, mm-hmm. there are many players that are important members of this team, but the way he's been playing right now, I think you could argue that he's been the MVP of this team since he's returned.
I think you could certainly make that argument. I mean, he has been, he's such an important cog for this team. And, you know, very quietly, and you talked to Dave about how the, you know, Paul Maurice's comments regarding the Jets' power play and why it's been successful now. Very quietly, the Jets' power play is up to 16th in the NHL, which is nothing to sneeze about for a team that has had, you know, special team struggles for the last 6 years. And Brian Little, like you said, an important piece that he's got everything the Jets all seem to look for in a player. He's tremendous. He's got great intelligence, great on-ice smarts. He's in the right spot. I mean, when's the last time you really remember seeing, you know, hearing, you know, Brian Little with the bad turnover? Or Brian Little, right. You know, on the wrong side of a player and having to take a penalty. He's probably what, you know, he's a coach's dream in that he almost doesn't need to be coached because the coach knows that they can rely on Brian Little in all situations and to be in the right spot no matter who he plays with. I mean, it was only, was that Tuesday's game or Monday's game against Anaheim? I think it was Tuesday against San Jose where Maurice swapped Scheifele and Little. And so all of a sudden Little was playing with Laine and Ehlers. And I thought when it happened, I think it was the start of the second period, boy, that's an interesting move. I don't know if I would have necessarily done that because you're used to seeing Little and Wheeler so often together. Oh, well, you know, mea culpa. I was wrong on that one. It certainly has worked out. Brian Little has fit seamlessly.
And he makes better players better when they play with him. He really does. I realize it's a cliche that we use in hockey, but I mean, this is a guy, I think he's just as good of a goal scorer as he is as a playmaker. And I agree, Dave. I mean, it's a subtle pass that he makes to Patrick Laine in the first period there on the power play. But the way he does it is so smart. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, he's a great all-around player. I don't think he gets enough credit for the way he plays defensively. I mean, when people think of Brian Little, it's usually offense. Mm-hmm. You know, but he's a very responsible forward defensively. So, I mean, I don't think Brian Little needs recognition as a top three forward. Like, I'm talking about him personally, but I think he deserves to be talked about as far as his importance and the incredible season he's having. And he missed a lot of time. And I agree with Dave. You know, you come back from injury. Sometimes you're a little bit rusty. I mean, we saw Jake Trouba and how rusty he was when he came back from the holdout, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, Brian Little came back and he immediately had an impact. So, you know, I think he does deserve a lot of credit and respect around the league for what he does with the Jets.
And further to Ezzie's point, and something that isn't touched on, is the fact that defensively he's extremely responsible.
Yeah.
And so you're right. We do have a tendency to focus on goals and goal scoring, which right now he's doing, and he's having no problem or facilitating, and that's not an issue. But, I mean, again, we're talking about a team that's fairly undisciplined, and you're talking about a player who has 6 penalty minutes.
Well, because he never puts himself into bad situations.
Right, but I'm saying, like, look at the other guys, and again, they all have the benefit of playing 20 more games than he does.
Mm-hmm. Lady
but,
Bing, Dave.
Yeah, but I mean, like, look at that. I mean, Ehlers has 22 penalty minutes.
He's got a career high in penalty minutes of 58, which was an anomaly. That was back in 2013-14. He took 58 penalty minutes. I mean,
that stands out. It was usually cold winter in Winnipeg.
He was just trying to hug people all the time. Is that what he was? Because, I mean, every other year he's in and around the 25, maybe 30 minutes of penalties.
But that's my point. I think that the hockey smarts don't get evaluated on a score sheet. So sometimes they get ignored. And I just think, like, a player like Brian Little, who doesn't put his team down. Again, he does all the things that you want a center to do, and then he also doesn't do the things that you shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. So that to me that's why I think that the benefit of Brian Little, and why it sounds like we're gushing about him, but like the fact is you can't ignore a player of that caliber on your team. And you really, I mean, it's a necessity. And again, is he one of the top 5 centers in the NHL? No, but I mean, he's an extremely valuable piece. If you want to have a successful team, you have to have players like Brian Little. And again, like I said, that sounds obvious, but there's too many teams that you say, oh, well, he doesn't get a lot of goals, or he doesn't. But that guy is the kind of type of player who, again, not flashy, does it in all areas of the rink, and just plays a smart game.
Paul Edmonds, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster here on TSN 1290, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Our website is illegalcurve.com. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve for those of you on that social media.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program honorary member of Illegal Curve, Paul Edmonstein. Paul, good morning and thank you for joining us. We have lost Paul completely. We're going to work on getting Paul back. It's the Shabbos, so Paul doesn't roll on the Shabbos is what we're finding out about that. Yeah. Anyways, we'll get Paul back up here momentarily. The technological mice that power the hamster board here are running into some difficulties.
As long as we're still on air.
I don't know. I never know when we're on air or not. It's really a crapshoot.
Well, it's the All-Star break, so maybe Paul decided that he wanted to just, sleep in and relax.
Yeah, that's
quite possible.
He could
be working on his outdoor rink. Maybe he wants to have us over, play a little backyard shinny.
Yeah. Well, Paul said he's going to play in the proposed Bell Media hockey game that's upcoming.
Yeah, and we're playing outdoor hockey after the show today.
Yeah, I'm not.
Well, Dave and I are, and we have a bunch of friends coming, but that Bell Media shinny game, I'm pumped about that.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Now we're still trying to get Paul on. Okay, yeah. The phones are completely dead, apparently. That's going to really work well for the final hour of the program when we're supposed to be taking calls.
It's almost like it's serendipitous. It's almost like someone said, you shall not take calls.
You shall not take calls today as the phones will no longer work here.
Well, maybe somebody didn't pay the phone bill.
That's possible. Were you in charge of paying the phone bill this month?
I'm not in charge of anything at the station.
No, I think that's probably for the best for everybody. Anyways, we're going to have Paul Edmonds on. We'll talk about the last 30 games of the Winnipeg Jets season.
Are we going to ask Paul to break down everyone?
I don't know if we're going to go game by game with Paul because he's not a fortune teller as far as I know. But we'll look back at the first 52 games of the season. It really is bizarre that it seems like this All-Star break is coming very late in the year, having played 52 games already. Paul, are you there now, good sir?
I'm good, yes. Quite the intro. We kind of stumbled out of the gate there.
We got to keep everybody, we got to keep them on their toes, and we got to keep them, the anticipation building. And then now that you're here, that they finally are so excited to hear from you.
I've always been one that tries to create that, or at least leave a little mystique about yourself,
Yeah. Always leave them wanting a little more. I totally understand
that's right.
that.
That's right.
We're sort of touching on the Jets at the All-Star break point of the year, and typically the All-Star break is around halfway this year. It's much later, given that it's game 52 the Jets have played already. 30 games to go in the year. here, Paul, and we were speculating at the beginning of the show that you're probably looking at 18 wins in the next 30 games for this team to really be a viable playoff contender. Given the inconsistency that you've seen from them this year, previous years, how viable do you think that 18 out of the next 30 is for this team? Or is that just the sort of the riddle of it all because they've been so Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Well, my benchmark actually was looking at it going into yesterday after the win in Chicago a couple of nights ago, and that was that they probably needed to take a little bit more than that, Drew, and that was 20 of the 30. And then you ask yourself the question, as you just asked me, B, is that possible? And based on their inconsistent play this year, I would say that a lot of people would probably lean toward the answer no. But it seems to me like they've got this goaltending issue kind of straightened away. And if that continues, then I think that they can make a charge toward that goal of winning 20 of 30 or whatever it is that they need to get back into the race. And they're not that far out. I mean, we should probably say that. And I mean, some of that is a function of the fact that the Western Conference maybe isn't as strong as certainly the Eastern Conference this year. I mean, I point to Exhibit A and look at Tampa Bay, or well on the outside looking in. But that doesn't really matter because you don't have any control of that. What you have control of is how you play the games and the points that you accumulate. So in saying all of that, I think that it is possible because it looks to me in the last five games, the last handful of games, that they've got one of the areas that was problematic for them. And I don't care what anybody says, it was. And it got to the point where they had to reach back to the AHL to pull Andrei Pavlik back because the team was not functioning mentally properly enough in front of those other two guys. They had lost some confidence in what was going on in the blue ice for them. That seems to have been restored with Andrei Pavlik running four straight games and then the stellar performance that we saw the other night by Connor Hellebuck against Chicago. So for me, it all starts right there. And then, of course, you can kind of point to the fact that you've got now on, you've got Pavlik back, you've got Patrick Laine back, he scores a goal. You're maybe going to get some help, not immediate after the All-Star break, but you've got to get some injury replacements back, whether that's Stafford or Perreault or both. It looks like Perreault is probably going to be out for a little while, but you've stabilized in the injury front. It looks like you've got a pretty good lineup going forward, especially with the kids. The specialty teams always seem to need some tweaking. They've been kind of inconsistent. They'll roll along for a while and then kind of pull back and not score a goal on the power play for a little while, although they got one the other night. So to answer your question in a nutshell, I believe that this team has the ability to get it done. I believe there's a renewed confidence in the entire group, and it really all starts with the goaltending. And on a small sort of sample size in the last five games, they seem to have got that figured out. And if they do rolling forward over the next 30 and don't have any other sort of stumbles in that department, then I think it certainly is plausible for them to win two out of the next three every single group.
Paul, you mentioned the game Thursday night against Chicago, and you had the call, of course. And how does Winnipeg keep doing this against Chicago? 4-0 against the Blackhawks, the second-place team in the Central Division. Do the Jets have four-leaf clovers in their hockey pants?
Well, I think that, they have played some pretty good defensive games, and they've got some very good goaltending in the games that they played, the four of them. They've also scored first in all four of the games, Ezra. And I don't care what anybody says either. When you score first on the road at home, you put a different pressure on the other team. Winnipeg Jets know all about that. So they've scored first. Yeah, they fell behind in that game against Chicago. They managed to battle back. There's just something, there's a little bit more in their step against the Chicago Blackhawks. I think it's because it's the Chicago Blackhawks and they've won three cups in the last, 8 years. It's also in their own division. They happen to be leading the division when they were going in with the Jets. They were looking above them in the standings and seeing who's atop the Central Division. But there's just something about the matchup between the two teams. And I think that, I asked Adam Lowry point blank that sort of same question. I mean, do you guys view this as a bit of a litmus test or a barometer to where you guys are? And he said, absolutely we do. And we feel certainly a little bit better, not only grabbing the 2 points when we beat them, but about what, maybe where we are in our game. So, and do maybe the Chicago Blackhawks take the Winnipeg Jets a little lightly? Well, you could probably make that argument, certainly for the first two games, but they shouldn't anymore because there's only one game left and it's coming up February 10th. And Chicago looked to me like they were they were really pushing it. It looked like Winnipeg maybe benefited from a couple of soft goals or a couple of goals that Chicago would have liked to have had back in Scott Darling, and the way they kind of pressure the defense of the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, you get past Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, and I'm not so sold on that defensive core, certainly for the Chicago Blackhawks. And you run those guys a lot of minutes, but you can't run them all 60 minutes, certainly, out there. You can space them apart and put them on different sort of defense pairings, but ultimately you have to roll some other defensemen and a third pairing out there. And I think the Winnipeg Jets, with their speed, have been able to take advantage of that over the Chicago Blackhawks. And let's not also forget that maybe the Blackhawks are getting a little bit older. I know Patrick Kane's still in his late 20s here, and there's a lot of years ahead. But on that back end, things are getting a little older than they had been, and they're not as experienced as they had been. You know, Brian Campbell's a pretty reliable defenseman, but, you know, he's well into his 30s now, and you know, he's not the defenseman he was certainly when he was with the Chicago Blackhawks and they won a cup. So all this factors into, I think, that the Winnipeg Jets are a quick team, that Chicago sometimes doesn't handle that very well, and I do think that you can jump on their defensive core and force them into making mistakes outside of Seabrook and Keith, for sure. And that's one of the recipes, I think, for success for the Winnipeg Jets, is their speed and their size on that back end for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Paul, one player I saw a lot of in the AHL was Josh Morrissey. And, you know, we weren't surprised by his offensive game with the Moose. And then when he transitioned to the Jets, you know, it was a little bit slow to start. But of late, especially, he's picked up his offensive game and his ability to quarterback the power play and do the things that we saw Josh Morrissey be successful at in his younger years. What has your overall impression been of Josh Morrissey's transition to the NHL game?
I think he's been tremendous. I think that, you know, this is sort of, if you, David, wanted to write a book on sort of the anatomy of building toward that, Josh Morrissey should really pen it, and it probably could be a bestseller for every young defenseman that's coming up. Because we knew that he had an offensive side to his game coming out of junior. And maybe we didn't see it necessarily last year with the Moose because the points weren't relatively there for the 50-plus games that he played. And he didn't play a full season there either.
Right.
But having said that, now that he's got comfortable at the NHL level, as he came in and he just kept it simple, he played with Bufflin, he was reliable, he made the first pass, he's a little bit more physical than you thought he might be for a guy that's really only 6 feet tall and probably about 180, 185 pounds. He's kind of slight that way. He's not a real big, you know, character, or he's not a real big guy. But then he's got comfortable in that role, and then he started to add slowly but surely some layers to his game. And as you've talked about, we're starting to see a little bit more of the offensive game, a little bit more jumping into the rush, a little bit more on holding that line for the extra half a second or second to make a play, a little bit more of jumping into the hole, maybe looking for a pass or making a move and then, you know, stepping in toward the slot area. So I cannot say enough about what I've seen from Josh Morrissey, certainly this year, and his development. He took it slow. It was simple. He kept it simple. There was no risk to his game. He got comfortable. He got confidence. Everybody around him got comfortable and confidence in playing with him. Dustin Bufflin requested playing with him, loves playing with him. I think that's the largest endorsement in and of itself. And now we've seen him add some other components to his game that he already had in the toolbox, but he just wasn't bringing out until the time was right. And I think that we've seen that certainly through the first 50 games. In the last 5-8 games, we've seen Josh Morrissey evolve into a more complete player on the offensive side. And let's face it, he's only 21 years old. There's way more to give here and a lot more years to watch it unfold for Josh Morrissey and Jets fans. I've been really impressed for a guy that I think a lot of people were scratching their head a couple of years ago wondering if this kid could play in the league, and I think the answer is unequivocally yes.
Paul Edmonds, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Paul, of course, is the Winnipeg Jets broadcaster here on TSN 1290. Paul, Thursday night in Chicago, Jacob Trouba, 28 minutes and 38 seconds. Dustin Bufflin, 28:53. Toby Enstrom and Josh Morrissey, both up over 21 minutes as well. How concerned would you be if you're Paul Maurice, if you're the Jets management, that you might be running your top four into the ground with the heavy minutes you're playing them?
Well, you know, are you saying they could certainly use Tyler Myers? Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, that's such a large question mark at this point that I think you've got to just soldier on with what you've got. And are you worried about burning some people out? Well, the number one guy would be Bufflin because, I mean, they ran him so hard in the first 25 or or 30 games for sure because of injury, and Jacob Trouba wasn't around for the first little while, and he was over 30 minutes in a lot of occasions per night. See, the thing is, I think that you probably would be a little bit more concerned about the minutes that you're running, say, Bufflin, Enstrom, Trouba, and Morrissey, if you weren't in a three-day All-Star break right now, if you weren't looking toward of the end of February and you've got a 5 or 6 or 7 day break that way. So I think that this is going to help this team. I mean, the worst is over, and you've run these guys pretty hard. So there is a little bit of rest and recuperation that's going to happen here with this weekend and then another weekend coming up in about 3 weeks' time. So I think there's some time where you can back off and say, you know, I'm not going to run these guys as hard, or they won't have the rigors of the schedule compounded with how many minutes that they're going to be playing per game. It is a bit of a concern, but it also will let you know where these guys are in terms of their physical condition and how much you can run them for future years. You know, Dustin Bufflin's got 4 more years after this. Jacob Trouba's got another year after this. You're going to have to obviously sign Josh Morrissey after the entry level is done as well. So it gives you a bit of an idea, a bit of a barometer of how hard you can run these guys. And I think that, honestly, you can get away with running 2 pairs of defensemen really hard as long as you have some complementary pieces on that third pairing. Paul Postma seemed to have kind of rolled into that role as well of late. And Mark Stewart, I think, has been fairly complimentary as well of late as well. But those are your 4 key pieces. How hard you can run them, I think, well, the worst is over, as I mentioned, with the, you know, the 32 games in 60 days. And now you've got a bit of a reprieve as you go along in the schedule with some off days. I think they're not going to skate them as hard. Certainly on morning skates, there's going to be more maintenance days. There's going to be more optionals for sure. There won't be skates on the second of back-to-backs. They've got a few of those still ahead on the schedule. So I think that they're okay in terms of where the minutes are being distributed and how many minutes each of those guys are getting. Certainly, I think that you do need that complementary pair from the bottom. But it seems to me that those guys just love to play. And the more they play, the more involved in the game they are. And you ask Jacob Trouba or Dustin Bufflin that question, they'll tell you the exact same thing. So is it a concern for me? Not at this point. It would be if they had another sort of carbon copy of the schedule that they had certainly in October, November, and part of December going forward into February and March. But it gets a little bit easier for the Winnipeg Jets going forward here with only 30 games left and certainly another 3-4 months on the schedule. So I think they're going to be okay.
Paul, as you mentioned earlier, it's the 2017 All-Star Weekend. This weekend, the Jets have one lone representative, Patrick Laine. I guess the one question I have for you is, how much of a chance are you giving Patrick Laine in that hardest shot competition? Can he hit 105 miles per hour?
Well, it would be interesting to see. I think that he certainly could do it. I would ask you guys this question because I know the answer. Would you like to stand in front of it and block it with some shin pads or with some goaltender equipment? My answer would be absolutely not. I mean, the way he gets it, the way I can barely see it, maybe it's my 50-year-old eyes now. I don't know. But, yeah, this would be interesting to see where he really clocks in on the speed of that shot. And I wonder, too, guys, at 18 years old, as he kind of fills into his body a little bit more and he gets a little bit stronger, where that shot can go. Is there still a little bit more velo for that shot to climb to, right? Can he get to, let's say it is 105, as you mentioned, Ezra. Can he get to 108? Can he get to 109? Can he get to 110? I think that this is the first, as Paul Maurice has said, and I am going to repeat, what he has basically said and quote, and that is, this is the first of probably many times that he'll be off to the All-Star game. So I think he'll have an opportunity to showcase his shot for many, many years. And we'll see if he can climb as his body kind of grows a little bit and he gets a little bit stronger as well. But it's a heck of a shot, heck of a release, heck of a slap shot. Scored a great goal the other night. And the other part of it is, too, you know, we look back to the other night, and I think that Chicago had built their penalty kill watching for Patrick Laine. There was about 3 or 4 one-timers that he had that you got to think that he's going to score on. But Scott Darling got over and made saves. So you wonder if the Jets will have a different wrinkle for goaltenders and teams that are building around that to try to go back to the other side with a pass from Patrick Laine if they're trying to cheat over on his side. So, you know, obviously his impact is felt already, certainly on the power play, but I'll be interested to see when it comes to the skills competition how hard that shot is for sure.
Paul Edmonds is the Winnipeg Jets broadcaster here on TSN 1290. Paulie, enjoy your All-Star break. We'll see you on Tuesday night in St. Louis as the Jets start up for the final 32.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Paul. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll touch on the All-Star Weekend in Los Angeles.
They'll regroup here, and here they come again across the line. Little into where the slot. Little out in front of shot. They score! Patrick Laine wasted no time on a one-timer. And Winnipeg opens up the score. It's 1-0 for the Jets.
Patrick Laine with his first goal since the concussion coming Thursday night in Chicago, getting the Jets on the board.
Never mind, Drew.
Nifty feed from Mr. Brian Little. He's off. He's in Los Angeles. Patrick Laine is the Winnipeg Jets representative at the 2016-17 All-Star Game. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Of course, remember, if you're ever looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli, big screen TVs, full volume, great drink specials, bernsteinsdeli.com for more information.
You should wash your Illegal Curve sandwich down with another Illegal Curve sandwich.
Yes, doctor recommends two Illegal Curve sandwiches.
Yeah, and you actually can put the Illegal Curve sandwich in a food processor and then have an Illegal Curve sandwich shake.
Dave?
I got nothing.
You need a thick straw because it's a thick shake.
I got nothing.
How is somebody marrying you? Like, somebody has consciously made the decision that they want to spend the rest of their life with that insanity.
Well, I don't know. I've chosen to spend quite a bit of time with Ez.
But you didn't marry him.
We kind of are married.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Drew. We drive to a lot of hockey games together. We come to the show together. I'm not so sure. It's not that far away.
We're definitely in a civil union.
exactly. I apologize, yes.
I'm pretty sure Mayor Bowman made it official last week, actually.
Mazel tov to both of you. Where you guys registered, I'll be glad to get you a gift. Are you going to watch the All-Star game? You're going to watch the... Really? Of course?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, you asked me. I said yes.
Okay. I'm surprised there was like a... It was like a no-brainer that you were going to watch it everything else.
Dating back to when Richie was on the show, I mean, I was always the one that was more into the All-Star game than you guys were. Drew, especially the skills competition. I like the skills competition more. I mean, this year, you know, the format, we had it last year as well, the 3-on-3. So, I mean, I like that format better than 5-on-5. Jonathan Taves said it himself a couple years ago when the All-Star game was in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
It was a horrible game. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why they switched to 3-on-3. So I'm going to watch the skills competition. I'm going to be more excited about the skills competition. They have a new accuracy event, which I think is going to be exciting, replacing the breakaway challenge. So I'm going to be more excited probably about the skills competition than the actual game itself on Sunday. But, I mean, I think it's going to be very exciting to see Patrick Laine and Austin Matthews out there and Connor McDavid, you know, the future wave of stars in the NHL.
Fair enough. Dave, do you have any interest in this, or are you just going to be take advantage of sort of the weekend off and be able to kick your feet up a little bit?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I'll probably be listening to the Moose game but on this fine network, but I don't know that I would potentially – I mean, I might turn it on just to see how Patrick Laine does,
right.
But I'm not particularly interested. I think the All-Star game is what it is. It's a bit of a sideshow. I mean, I think that they put on a good little production for fans, and that's what it is. I don't think that – I think it's more of a regional thing. I think, like, if you're in L.A. right now, you're probably interested in it.
Sure.
But I don't know that tons of people in Winnipeg, to talk about our market, are clamoring to watch it. I think that people will, again, because Patrick Laine is in his first one.
Well,
I think that's what it comes down to for me is that
– Yeah, the first of many.
First of many. But, again, like I said, so I think that's the curiosity. And we saw him here at the skills competition – He was wild. I mean, I guess I was I was there live, but he hit 101.2 miles per hour on his slap shot, and he went 4-for-4, smashing former Winnipeg Jet Kyle Wellwood's record. I think he was 4-for-4 in 8.7 seconds.
No, Dave, he didn't smash those targets. He obliterated targets.
That's exactly it. So he did it in, I think he beat him by, maybe a second or something like that. But the point is that
the two events he's in the skills competition tonight, I believe, are harder shot.
And accuracy. Yeah, that's why I'm talking about it. But exactly. So those are interesting. You'll want to watch it for Laine, but am I particularly interested to watch the rest of it? No, not really. I mean, I'd rather, like I said, listen to the Moose game.
I think if we've seen anything from Patrick Laine this year is that he does have a little bit of a flair for showmanship. And in an NHL that is always sort of lacking in showmanship, I think he might be able, if he's able to, I know it's a lot of pressure, or pressure, quote unquote, it's his first All-Star game, but for a guy like that who seems to sort of sometimes thrive in the spotlight, he might have some fun being in Los Angeles and having, you know, sort of garnering the sunshine for a little while.
I think you're 100% right, Drew. I think there's no question that he's the kind of guy who thrives in the spotlight, has no problems with it. He can handle the questions. That's not an issue for him at all. So I think he's going to excel. And again, it's not a bad thing. And you know, the one thing I was really impressed by his answers, I wrote about it yesterday in the morning papers. I was impressed by the fact that he talked about not just representing the team, but also the city. And he's talking about how he's going there to put on a good show, not as just a member of the Winnipeg Jets, but as a member of the city of Winnipeg and what it means for the community. And I like that answer. I thought it was a good answer, knowing that it's more than, like, to Winnipeg, the Jets are more than just a hockey team.
Sure, saying Winnipeg on the bright lights.
That's right. It's part of the identity. And you know, I think that speaks well to fans locally when they hear that sort of thing. So I was impressed by that answer. I think he'll put on a good show. I think there'll be a lot of spotlight, obviously, with, you know, Matthews there as well. But I think, like, Patrick Laine thrives in these and rises to the occasion when these type of opportunities present themselves.
Dave, it's supposed to be a fun weekend.
Yep.
I mean, the outcome of the game on Sunday, does it actually matter? No. I mean, just enjoy it. Watch some guys showcase their skills. Watch the game if you want to or not. And that's about it.
I'll say that it's a shame that Nikolaj Ehlers isn't going to be on a 3-on-3. Could you imagine how good he would be?
He would be dynamic. And that's sort of part of the problem with the format, with every team requiring having to have an all-star there, is that you get some people who aren't deserving, quote-unquote, of being an all-star, and some other guys who are definitely deserving have to sit it out. So that's a little bit of the drawback to the whole format.
And again, he makes...
Who cares?
I agree, but I'm just saying, like, him in that format, it's perfectly suited for his game. I mean, to be able to use his speed, his vision, I mean, it would be like...
You're talking about Ehlers right now.
Yeah, Ehlers. I'm just saying, like, to watch Ehlers play in that sort of format would be like, think about how exciting overtime is.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's not a fun... It's a no-brainer.
That's right. When we come back from break, we're going to go 2 hours down the road. The Brandon Wheat Kings are in the midst of their season. We haven't touched on the Wheaties yet this year. Brandon Crow, Brandon Wheat Kings broadcaster, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A little bit of Wheat Kings talk coming up next on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. A reminder, in 60 minutes' time, we're going to open up the phone lines. We rarely do it on this show, so don't miss your opportunity. 780-1290, that's coming up at 11 a.m. We're going to open up the phone lines. For now, though, we head out on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Brandon Crow. Brandon is the Brandon Wheat Kings broadcaster. That's going to be very confusing throughout the course of this interview. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Yeah, no, glad to be along, fellas. Appreciate
Our pleasure it. To have you, Brandon. Thanks for joining us. You know, obviously we haven't spoken to you yet this season regarding the Wheat Kings. You know, they're currently in the fourth spot in the East Division. They are in a wild card spot when it comes to the playoffs. How would you assess the first 46 games of the Brandon Wheat Kings season? Has it been sort of up and down, more on the disappointing side, or is this sort of where you expected the Wheat Kings to be at this point in time?
Well, that depends entirely on who you ask. If you ask the fans, I think they're probably a little bit disappointed. But, I mean, last year they were certainly treated to a fantastic hockey team. And I think a lot of the Wheat King fans in the city didn't realize that, you know, when you lose a guy like Ivan Provorov and you know, his D partner McCoy Erkamps and Jace Howerlick and John Quenville and Tim McGauley, all of a sudden you're going to take a step back a little bit. And you know what? Up and down would be the best way to describe it. Realistically, the hockey club really struggled out of the gate, but that was based on a ton of injuries. I mean, Cale Clegg was at, you know, NHL camp in L.A., and he got hurt. And, of course, Nolan Patrick, we all know he didn't play. You know, we had a couple other D-men go down with strange illnesses or injuries, and other guys just couldn't stay healthy. And, you know, it was a tough start for the team. But ever since Christmas break, they've really turned it around. I mean, since December 16th, you know, just four regulation losses in that span. So, I mean, I think the team's turned a corner. Everybody's relatively healthy now, and I think the push for the playoffs begins now.
Brandon, what's the transition been like with Kelly McCrimmon becoming assistant general manager of the Las Vegas Golden Knights? He still is the owner of the Brandon Wheat Kings, but David Anning took over behind the bench. What's that transition been like for the Wheaties?
Well, it was kind of an interesting offseason for the hockey club because everybody from the trainer to the radio guy, which is me, and to everybody else, assistant coaches, coaches, GM, everybody changed over. So I think from that perspective, the fact that everybody was new and everybody started on the same page was kind of a good thing. You didn't have any, older guys or kind of guys that had were stuck in their ways. Kind of everybody came in and started fresh. I think the transition's been okay. Without Las Vegas not playing, without them, having a season this year, Kelly's been a lot more involved, I think, than he will be, say, next year when Las Vegas is icing a team. He's been in about a dozen games. He's at the rink. His office is there, and he's working there regularly. I mean, he has no real reason to be in Vegas. So he's still around, and I think he still, helps make some of the business decisions. But from a hockey side of things, he's really stepped aside and let Dave and Grant Armstrong, the new GM, and the rest of the coaching staff really do their thing. And like I said, it was maybe a slow start, but I think things are starting to really come around here now and come together.
Brandon, the Wheat Kings are celebrating their 50th anniversary in the WHL this season. They're wearing some specialty jerseys. What are some of the other things that they're planning on doing for the to celebrate that milestone?
Well, it's really disappointing that the home opener had to be fogged out in one of the strangest games ever, because that was an absolutely memorable night. I think there was like 55 or 5,600 people in the building. They had members of the original team from 1967 there. Of course, the banners and everything going up from last year's championship season, it was just a fantastic night. And, they've had Nolan Patrick bobblehead night already. They've got Chris Dingman bobblehead coming up. And I think, if you've been a Wheat King fan through the 90s, he's a guy you remember as, mm-hmm. as the guy that led them to their championship in 96. So, and the jerseys, too. I mean, when you think Brandon Wheat Kings, they've had some really cool jerseys over the years. And we saw the one from the, the early 90s and 2000s with kind of the Bran Muffin-looking logo on the front, and they're going back to the original ones from 67 here right away, and then you'll see another one later on that personally are one of my favorites. And I know if you're a Wheat King fan and you think jerseys from the early 2000s, you can probably piece together what it is. But it's been a fun year. I mean, they put out a 50th anniversary book. Rick Dillabo, the director of marketing, did a fantastic job with it. Basically, every piece of Wheat King history ever was put in a book. It's just a beautiful coffee table book, and I know there's still some available if you're a Wheat King fan at the Wheat King store. And, it's just been a fun year to be around with all the history. It's a fantastic organization, and, it's something to celebrate, and the fans have really embraced it. And I think the players, with everything that's going on, really appreciate, that they're in an organization that has that much history and pride that goes along with it.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Brandon Crow, who is the Brandon Wheat Kings play-by-play broadcaster. Brandon, it's amazing we're four questions into this interview and we are now only getting to Nolan Patrick. He, of course, missed such a significant part of the season with the injury. He's been back now for five games. He's racked up 8 points in those five games. He's got 17 points in 11 games played this season. How has he looked from your perspective? Now that he's back healthy, has he missed a beat at all, or is this the Nolan Patrick that everyone expects to go first overall?
Well, he's not half bad, I'll tell you that. the guy's got some skill. I think if there's anything that, you kind of asked if he's back in full stride, I think he's maybe still a little bit behind when it comes to maybe his conditioning and whether or not he's in tip-top shape. But, I mean, the guy missed, 30-some games, and I don't necessarily blame him for that. But, his hands and his timing are all there. And we saw that in his first game back. He had a couple of goals and a couple of assists against Kootenay on that Friday night in front of basically a sold-out barn that welcomed him back into the lineup. And, he does things, and I mean, I've watched a lot of junior hockey over the years, and he does things that, I still don't understand how he does them. And, it just seems like when he has the puck, he has more time and space than anybody on the ice, and it's really fun to watch. So I think, now that he's back and he's 100% healthy and he's skating every day, it'll only be a matter of time before he's really flying at the top of his game and really gets people talking, more than they already have.
Yeah, Brandon, you mentioned Cale Clegg, a Los Angeles Kings draft pick, played for Team Canada at the 2017 World Junior Tournament. How did that experience, help him going forward with the Wheat Kings this year?
Well, I think you all saw him all of a sudden take on, arguably one of the biggest defensive responsibilities on that team after Philip Myers went down and with the injury early on in the tournament. All of a sudden, Cale Clegg, who was maybe kind of a guy that got in a 6 or 5 6 spot, all of a sudden he's on the number one pairing. And I think, you know, fans were pleasantly surprised at the job he did. And, you know, for me, it was a bit of a different look of Cale Clegg, because, you know, what I see is he's a very offensive guy. He's a very high risk guy, loves to take chances in the offensive zone. But in that situation, he had to play defense. So I thought it was really neat to see how he handled that. I thought he did a fantastic job. He logged a lot of minutes and really did a good job defensively. And, you know, he came back and you can just see that extra little bit of confidence in him. And you know, I think that goes a long way, you know, pressure-wise and handling things. When you can go and play on that stage and have success at that level, you just bring it back with you and you just got that extra kind of swagger to your step. And, you know, he's been good since he's come back. I mean, he's still a young kid, and I think that's what a lot of people forget, is that these guys are teenagers still, and they're going to have their off nights and they're going to have their off stretches. But, you know, coming back and coming right out of the World Juniors, you know, both getting him and Nolan Patrick back right around the deadline, basically it's like picking up two of the better players in the league for free, really. So, you know, it's good to have them both back in the lineup and playing regularly.
Brandon Crowe is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Brandon is the Brandon Wheat Kings play-by-play broadcaster. Brandon, I wanted to ask you about Stelio Mathéos. He was the first overall pick in the Western Hockey League draft back in 2014. He's got 38 points in 46 games played so far this season. That's his best season with the Wheat Kings so far. He's draft eligible in the NHL this year. You know, where do you see? How would you describe his game, and where do you see him being drafted in the upcoming NHL draft?
Well, Stelios he's kind of an interesting you know, guy to watch for me, and obviously the rankings for the draft came out a couple of weeks ago, and he was ranked, I think, 23rd or 25th. I don't remember off the top of my head, but kind of right in the late first round type spot for the upcoming draft in Chicago. And I think that's pretty accurate. And, you know, I've talked to some NHL scouts as they walk through the buildings that, you know, I've been in, and we sit down before the games in the media and scouts room, and they kind of all feel the same way. I mean, he's a big kid. He shoots hard. And I think the only question is his consistency night in and night out. I mean, there are stretches where, you know, you see Stelio and he's great for 3 or 4 games in a row, and he's on the score sheet and he's doing everything right. And then you see him for 3 or 4 and you don't really notice him out there. And I think that's kind of been the question this year. You know, and I think that a large part of this year too is without Nolan in the lineup, you know, everybody on forward on this Brandon Wheat Kings team had to play with different guys every night. The lineup was never the same, and that's always a tough groove to get into. But, you know, he's really come on here in the second half since Christmas. Both him and Nolan are playing in that CHL Top Prospects game coming up on Monday. And I know talking to him after practice yesterday, he's fired up for that, and he really thinks this is an opportunity for him to climb up those rankings and really turn some heads and show that, you know, he can play at the next level, and he's worthy of a first-round pick.
Brandon, you touched on it in your first response, talking about the new feel to the team and how you're new to the position as play-by-play for the Brandon Wheat Kings. You're a Boisevin guy, about an hour south on Highway 10, I believe, from Brandon. So what's it been like for you to be able to have this opportunity to call a team I suspect you followed when you were a kid?
That is the coolest thing, and I tell my friends that, and you know, growing up, I was that kid that played mini sticks in the front row along the glass with all my buddies. And, you know, I remember a lot of, you know, fantastic Wheat King moments when I was a kid. I remember Jordan Tutu and you know, Ryan Craig and Eric Fair and Ryan Reeves and all those guys growing up. And it was kind of a surreal thing to have this ultimately come full circle and be in this position now. It's truly an honor. And like I said earlier, it's an organization with a ton of history. And, you know, I've had other opportunities with different Western League franchises, but it just never felt like the right fit. And when this came along, it just couldn't have been more perfect. And when the home opener came around and they played the pregame video, which is a fantastic tribute to the history of the team, and it's got all these old clips of games that I remember as a kid, I remember watching that and just kind of being taken aback and thinking, wow, you know, I'm here. This is really cool, and I get to be a part of this. So I always wanted to play for the team, and if you ask anybody, I was never close to being good enough. So this is the next best thing. I'll take it.
Brandon Crowe is the Brandon Wheat Kings play-by-play broadcaster. Brandon, really appreciate your time and your analysis this morning. Thanks very much for doing this. We'll do it again as the Wheat Kings get closer to the playoffs.
You betcha, fellas.
Yeah, Brandon, and if you can send us that Chris Dingman bobblehead, you know, we'd appreciate that.
I'll see what I can. I'll see if they give me more than one. I had a hard time getting just one Nolan Patrick one. Easier, so we'll see what I can do.
All righty, Brandon. Thanks for doing this.
You betcha, fellas.
Let's head to break. When we come back, the NHL unveiled their top 100 NHL players of all time.
And Dale Hawerchuk was on the list.
It's slightly controversial for those of us in Winnipeg. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, IC Radio, on TSN 1290.
Any obvious omissions from previous decades?
Yeah, for me, it's in the 80s. I know a lot of goals were scored, but how can you ignore the 548 scored by Michel Goulet of the Quebec Nordiques? To me, not only was he a first ballot Hall of Famer, he should be on this list. And Dale Hawerchuk, the great Jets superstar center who was in the shadow of Wayne Gretzky in that decade, and despite the vision, but to me, his numbers suggest he's one of the best 100 players.
These numbers would suggest that to a lot of people. Pierre LeBrun talking about the omissions from last night's top 100 list of all-time NHL players. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Remember, 11 a.m., we're going to open up the phone lines, primarily looking for your talk on the Jets. But Dale Hawerchuk certainly counts as being a member of the Winnipeg Jets. So you can touch on the omission of number 10 from the list of the top 100 NHL players of all time. Certainly, that's 11 a.m. Remember, the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290 at 11 a.m. in about 40 minutes' time. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Now, Mauro Zappia would be happy because he's a big Edmonton Oilers fan.
Yep.
And the Oilers were certainly well represented on that list, as you would expect, given their tremendous 1980s era. Connor McDavid didn't quite make the list yet, but probably give it about another decade and he'll be on that list. But the omission,
I think you give him maybe 2 years.
Yeah, maybe 2 years. The omission of Dale Hawerchuk is what I would describe, for lack of a better word, probably inexcusable. There's some controversial people that were left out. LeBrun talked about Michel Goulet.
Did you say LeBrun or LeBron?
LeBrun. Pierre LeBrun.
Okay.
Talked about Michel Goulet. Evgeny Malkin was left off. A lot of people were surprised at that. Joe Thornton was left off.
Zdeno Chara.
Zdeno Chara was left off. And admittedly, you only have room for 100. But to not have Dale Hawerchuk on that list is, I think, asinine.
Yes, and I'll let Dave get in here in a second because I know he was tweeting about it last night. But, I mean, first off, guys, you have to take any list, not just this list, but most top 100, top 25 lists with a grain of salt, right? I mean,
sure.
Let's not take it too seriously, but, I mean, this is a big deal because you had 58 different members of the media and hockey executives and hockey owners making these selections as part of the NHL's 100th anniversary celebrations. So maybe this list is looked at as more important than other lists. I also like how they didn't rank the players. But on the topic of Dale Hawerchuk, guys, I mean, this is one of the greatest scorers of all time. He's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, we know that he was overshadowed by Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux. Everybody knows that. But when you're talking about the top 100 players of all time, not only should he be on this list, he might be a top 30 player of all time. I mean, when you look at his totals, he's, I believe, top 30 all-time in NHL scoring.
He's
18th overall.
Right, so there you go. He's 18th. And he doesn't make the top 100 list. And I realize it was broken up into eras. But come on, Hawerchuk's got to be there.
With the exception of Wayne Gretzky from the early 80s on, Dale Hawerchuk was the man. I mean,
yep.
And, of course, we're biased because we watched him. And Randy Turner had a good point. He said, there's no point in getting too worked up over lists, as he just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no – it's not like we're pulling our hair out. We don't have enough to pull out.
Yeah,
but
no, not enough hair.
But the fact is that how you leave a player who's eighth all-time in points per game – he's eighth.
Mm-hmm.
Eighth. And you have – and he's a Hall of Famer. He won the Calder Cup as Rookie of the Year in 1981, 82, or 82, 82 – whatever, no, 81, 82. They had 103 points. I mean, the guy, he was a five-time All-Star. He eclipsed the 100-point mark six times in the 1980s with Winnipeg.
Played on that 1987 Canada Cup team.
Yeah, well, had the critical face-off and, what people forget, the critical hook.
Yes.
Against the Russians.
If you're going to penalize him, quote-unquote, for not winning a Stanley Cup, you have to at least give him the praise for being on that 87 Canada Cup team. When
Hold on, Drew. How many cups did Matt Sundin win?
As far as I know, we'll carry the one, times it by 10, divide it by zero, times it by another. Zero would be the answer.
Well, come on. I mean, you don't penalize the guy for not winning a Stanley Cup. I mean, he had 1,400 career points.
All you need to know is in that situation, the coach, who I believe, was Mike Keenan the coach of that team?
In 87?
Who's the coach in 87?
I think it was Mike Keenan.
Yeah, Keenan, I believe, was the coach in 87.
Yeah, it was Mike Keenan.
He trusted Dale Hawerchuk to go out there and be on that shift in that crucial moment with Lemieux and with Gretzky. So Dale Hawerchuk, I mean, there's no argument about whether or not he deserved to be on this list or not. This is just a glaring error by the 58 members of NHL front offices, media, and I believe some league executives who just, they whiffed on that one.
Like, by the way,
it's just a miss.
Yes, and by the way, guys, he was over a point a game per game. Pardon me, he was over a point per game in the playoffs. He had 99 career points in the playoffs in 97 games. So, yes, he
something very fitting about him having 99
right.
points.
But, yeah, it's funny. But, like, you know what I mean, though, Drew? Like, he didn't win the cup, but it's not like he wasn't good in the playoffs.
No, I mean,
the Jets got to the second round twice in their existence. And when you look at what Dale Hawerchuk did in the mid to late 80s there, you know, with the Sabres, he had that good run in the early 90s. I think he had 14 points in two rounds in the playoffs. So, I mean, this is one of the greatest players of all time. But again, I mean, let's not get too worked up. But if you look at all of the lists, and Mike Halford, who we had on the show last week for NBC Pro Hockey Talk, he did the, you know, who were the biggest omissions. And Dale Hawerchuk was number one.
Yeah, well, there's no discussion about him. Matt Sundin, I mean, all due respect to Matt Sundin, who has a very nice career with the Toronto Maple Leafs, doesn't deserve to be on that list. That is a selection because he played the primary years of his career with Toronto. That's the only reason why he's on that list. I mean, you can't put up Matt Sundin and Dale Hawerchuk next to each other and say that Matt Sundin is a better player than Dale Hawerchuk.
Right, and I really like Matt Sundin. And yep. I was talking to Dave about this off air. I mean, when you have a top 100 list, I mean, there are going to be 30, 40, 50 guys that you could say, oh, yeah, you know, he could be on the list, whether it's, you know, Joe Thornton, who I believe should be in that list. So you're always going to have, Drew, guys that don't make the list. But the point is, when you have a player who is that dominant in the 1980s and 1990s, mm-hmm. he has to be on the list.
What about Pat LaFontaine? And again, I like Pat LaFontaine as a player, but you're going to tell me Pat LaFontaine is on this list over Dale Hawerchuk? I just can't. I mean, yeah, Pat LaFontaine had one season where he had 148 points. Yeah. He had one other season where he cracked 100. Other than that, he didn't have any other 100-point seasons. And again, like I said, it's an era thing, and I get it. But, like, Pat LaFontaine played from 83-84 to 97-98. So fairly close in terms of years that Dale Hawerchuk played. And again, I get that he's an American, and a lot of these guys probably were Eastern Conference. We always have to assume there's a bit of an East Coast bias. But again, as he said, you don't get too worked up over this. Although clearly we're pretty worked up over it. But again,
not so much practicing what we're preaching.
No, because you look at it and you think to yourself, like, it's just, I look at Dale Hawerchuk and I think, what did he do with the fairly motley crew that he had assembled around him? I mean, we're not talking about Wayne Gretzky, who had Mark Messier, Jari Kurri, the list goes on and on and on. And don't get me wrong, I love what Gretzky did, and Gretzky made players better, there's no question. But so did Hawerchuk. Hawerchuk took guys, I mean, Paul McLean, think about the seasons Paul McLean had, and Brent Ashton, and like all these guys who had phenomenal seasons as a result of playing with a player of Dale Hawerchuk's caliber.
Pat Elenuk.
Yeah, exactly, number 15. So the fact is, if you leave a guy, I get that you can't have it's a finite number. You can only have so many on a list of 100. But to leave a guy off 18th overall in NHL overall for points, it's inconceivable.
And Dave, he might not have made the top 100 list, but he does have a band named after him.
Yeah, that's true. The late
How many of these guys have a band named after them?
How many of them have sandwiches named after them? They're all very good questions there, yeah. Ezzy. But it really is. I mean, you look at taking away from Hawerchuk for a second.
Yep.
Joe Thornton deserves to be on that list.
Michel Goulet.
Yeah, Michel Goulet. I think no problem
Gino
with that.
Gino Malkin.
Yeah, Evgeny Malkin deserves to be on that list. I don't love the inclusion of Duncan Keith. Duncan Keith's a terrific player, but is he one of the top 100 players of all time?
And it was probably between Duncan Keith and Zdeno Chara, but I mean, he's got three Stanley Cups. He was incredible. Well, you know, their last Stanley Cup run. It's one of those things, Drew, where...
Well, I wish I knew the criteria. I wish I knew, and I don't, but, you know, did the NHL or whoever was, you know, did the NHL say you should wait, you know, put extra weight on those who've won Stanley Cups? I mean, I don't think
that would be,
they did.
To me, the only thing that could preclude Howard Chuck from being on this list would be...
Well, again, though, Dave, Pat LaFontaine and Matt Sundin don't have cups.
No, but I was going to say, like, maybe a lack of taking his team deep into the playoffs. That's maybe the only thing I could... I'm trying to think what potential criteria could you use?
The only criteria that there is, the only reason Dale Howard Chuck didn't make this list is because he spent the majority of his years here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
You know, the unfortunate truth is that, you know, there's the small fish in the big pond... Dale Hawerchuk never got the credit he deserved. Look, he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
He was second.
And he was a second ballot Hall of Famer, which was stupid when that happened because I think at that point in time he was top 10 all-time in NHL points when he failed in that first year. So it's a case of, you're absolutely right, East Coast bias, playing in Winnipeg, not getting the recognition you deserve, getting eliminated by the Oilers, you know, all, that always being that bugaboo and not having to constantly run your head against Wayne Gretzky, you know, year in and year out. But, you know, you would hope that the esteemed 58 would have been able to look beyond that and acknowledge the greatness that Dale Hawerchuk was year in and year out. And the greatness, sorry, that Joe Thornton and Evgeny Malkin are year in and year out. They deserve to be on this list.
Well, if it's any consolation to the coach of the Barrie Colts, he's on our all-time greatest all-snub team. So he's made that list.
If we could somehow combine the all-food team with the all-snub team, that would be...
The all-food team is pretty significant.
Yari Curry made it.
Yes, because he's got curry.
Paul Coffey.
Yeah, Coffey. I'm drinking some right now. Yeah.
Kari Taco didn't make it, though.
No, not on the all-time list.
Neither did Mark Lamb.
Mark Lamb, no, didn't make it.
And
there.
We have a new member of the all-food team, Nick Schmaltz.
Nick Schmaltz, well, yeah.
Which one? Oh, Nick Schmaltz.
Nick Schmaltz.
Yeah. Two Schmaltzes.
Yeah. Soon there'll be another additional Schmaltzes.
And actually, we just talked to Brandon Crow, who does play-by-play for the Brandon Weekings. Kale Clegg, you can add him.
Why?
Kale.
Oh, kale, right. Yes, it's a leafy lettuce.
Yeah.
That's good thinking there, Ezzy.
I've never eaten kale.
No, I would assume that you would be allergic to it or something and rejected like a kidney or something along those lines. Michael Trakos joins us next. He's a good friend of the program. We'll have some fun with Michael. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Remember, open phones in 30 minutes' time here on TSN 1290.